Good morning. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Angelina Ebeling. Good evening in your case, Angelina. How you doing?
Thanks. Good evening, Mark, or rather good morning. I know we're bridging 9 hours today, which is not always the case when we do calls, I guess, in the remote world. It is definitely one of those bigger time zone differences to tackle.
Yes. Well, I've been doing one lately with Vietnam, so that's actually pretty tough.
That is tough. What is that, 12 hours?
It's 15 hours. You're always adding or subtracting three when that one. So to start with, can you share a brief description of your background, what you were doing before? And I should announce you're the founder and CEO of AceWorks. So before AceWorks, what were you doing?
Absolutely. Before AceWorks, I worked for a marketing technology company that was originally from Germany. I was the first remote worker that they had. I was in Berlin. They were in Munich. And then they sent me to the US and they led the market expansion there, which was a very interesting, rewarding time. But it made me learn a lot about how remote work should work and how it shouldn't work. So I think that was basically my spark moment to found AceWorks in the end, which is dealing with remote jobs and finding people flexible and remote opportunities. And yeah, before working in an environment that really wasn't set up for it, it didn't really click. Right. Mm-hmm. So there I really realized how important it is that the setup is correct, that you've got the processes in place. You can't just randomly add a person that is remote. You kind of need to define where do they work from. I had to go into a co-working space, even though I was the only person there. But they made me commute an hour and a half every day for absolutely no reason. So it was a lot of absurdity. And that was, I guess, back in 2016. So that was before remote work was even a normal thing, right? Yeah, and then AceWorks was founded, or I founded it in 2018. That was pre-COVID. Still, remote wasn't the en vogue thing, right? It was still very much a niche. There were some companies present in the space, but we were a small, cozy community, I would say. We all kind of knew each other, and now it's obviously blown up and it's big and controversial as well.
Somewhat controversial. So it's interesting. If you had an hour and a half commute, I'm going to say either New York or San Francisco. Which one?
It was New York. Yes.
New York. And so were you on the New Jersey side or on the New York side?
On the New York side. So locations was, the office was in a good location. It was in Soho. So it wasn't really that bad, but I wanted to live in Brooklyn. All my friends were out in Bed-Stuy for those who know New York a little bit. So that was a 45-minute commute one way. That's just what it was.
We didn't even know you were living close to my son at the time. He lived there, and so did my daughter. My daughter went to NYU, so very cool. So it seems like we have a lot of synergies between our company, but when you say, tell us exactly what differentiates AceWorks.
Absolutely. We are a boutique talent partner for remote-first tech companies, right? We help find those strategic hires that lead sustainable growth for them, right? We are very much focused on, understanding what the company needs at that moment. We really found out over the course of what now 4 or 5 years, how different remote companies can be, right? Whether they're fully distributed or they've got different hubs or whether they're still a headquarter. Cultures are always unique, right? They're general defining factors of what needs to happen for a good remote company to function, but then they're actually quite individual and quite different. So we really drill in and understand the problem and then find the people that fit into that culture and, of course, that have the skill set for the required role.
Very cool. So you could say you're both a consultant and a I'm not gonna say placement agent, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. As a talent partner, I guess that's what you can say, right? There's agency, all sorts of different words for it. We do a lot of consulting as we go, right? We often work on retained assignments, or mostly work on retained assignments, which means we, have a commitment from the client and we commit to the client to really find that person, right? We're not just sending over some CVs hoping to make a placement, right? To really work with them. So that automatically means that we do a lot of consulting. We do a lot of advising on what does the market look like. I can always give this example of trying to find more talent in a new location, right? We are a global company. We've got recruiters and talent partners everywhere. We really understand different markets and we're really good at doing research in a market. And we bring that back to the client, right? So they understand then, okay, what do I need to do to attract developers in Latin America? And I know, Gabe, you guys are, you know, Latin America, Asia, like all these different regions are not new for you, and you know the intricacies of those places, right? And we give that to the client because we want them to really then make more informed hiring decisions further down the line, right? Preparing them for future hires in that way.
Yeah, and I think the other difference is we really concentrate on technology people, so, you know,
exactly,
software developers. And you have a broad range. I mean, if someone needs a CFO, you'd help them find a CFO, correct?
We haven't, like, in all transparency, we have not done a CFO. And C-level is definitely a different beast on its own. Mm-hmm. We've done those searches. But we absolutely can, right? So the deal there is that it is a consultancy project, right? And we really find out what does the client need. But of course, traditionally, like, tech is the most in-demand skill and the most remote-friendly, if you will. I mean, there's a reason why Gaper is focused on that, right?
Yeah.
Software engineers are traditionally the ones who want to work remotely the most.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the hardest to find in a specific location, and they're very expensive in that location.
Yes.
Looking at San Francisco over there and the salaries that you have. So the need and the pain was kind of the highest there.
Mm-hmm.
But we do see it coming along for other roles as well.
And it's interesting because you said you started 5 years ago, which is 2017 about.
Yeah.
Back then, there was no pandemic. You know, other than tech, people pretty much went into the office every day, right? So did you find it hard to really get started and find people to accept that, hey, you know, remote is going to be the wave of the future?
It was very interesting because back then, I would say the demand for remote jobs was much higher than the supply. Right. So initially what we did is we offered companies that were hiring remotely a filter mechanism to really focus on the relevant candidates for them.
Mm.
It was really about tuning out all that noise, because as soon as you put up a role as remote on the internet, you would get 1,000 applications. Right? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of crazy, right? As a recruiter and your colleagues in HR, like, they don't love screening CVs. It's not their favorite job at all. And there's automation tools, and you can make that faster and more efficient and so on. But really what you want to rely on, right, is a good filtering or pre-assessment, and then talk to the relevant people, right? Mm-hmm. That's the main joy that recruiters and HR people often have, right, is doing those interviews and moving the people through the process and not look at 1,000 CVs that are completely irrelevant and just to send rejection or, you know, trigger the automated thank you, but no thank you. So that was 2017, and we really helped with that filtering. Now it's really shifted. Mm-hmm. Right now it's really shifted to the fact that we have companies come to us that are remote or that have been remote for 10 years, and they're very mature remote companies, no office, everything is perfectly set up, they're great companies, we love to work with them because they're very clear in their process, but they tell us, hey, our employer brand got drowned out. Right? Like, we're not unique anymore. Everybody's suddenly hiring remotely, but often that's not clearly defined, but they just get drowned out in the noise now of offers of remote work. Right? Often on the second or third look, like with a company, especially in the US, you realize remote doesn't always mean remote. Right? Remote can mean just in the US. It can mean just in one state. It could mean just in some time zones, etc. Or it could even just mean 2 days of work from home a week. Like, we've seen it all, right? We've seen work remotely whenever you want. And then, like, we dig into it because we have an interest of obviously working with these companies. And they're like, no, we're actually not remote. we all go into an office, but we get 2 days of work from home. These kind of companies that now are looking to improve their employer brand and become unique anymore, they have trouble now, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't have the sourcing and outreach strategies in place to really find this top talent that would previously, 4 years ago, would naturally come to them, because they now got all these options. And a great developer, in all honesty, at any company, they can say, I want to work remotely, and the company doesn't want to lose them. So I would say in probably 80% of the cases, they get to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Very rarely are they being let go of, unless there's a very strict policy. So it's really shifted. So now, previously it was screening, right? Vetting, filtering. Now it's very much personalized, targeted outreach to find the best person that's available to that company at that time, right? We always say that there's no perfect candidate, but you can find the best possible candidate in that moment.
Yeah, no, that and that makes sense. And it's interesting. There's a very famous businessman in the U.S. who is 100% against remote. It's Elon Musk, right? Oh. And it's going to be interesting to see if he gets Twitter, because Twitter's gone 100% remote.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's an interesting thing. And maybe to talk a little bit about trends of what has changed as well, aside from the fact that everybody now offers remote work to a certain extent, there are also quite a lot of companies that have said very clearly, taken their stance against it, right? That said, well, we've tried it. It burned out our people. You know, we lost connection to our culture, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's perfectly fine and normal. Like, I never envisioned a world where everybody will work remotely or everybody has to work remotely. I think it's got to do with a lot of different things, right? It's personal factors. It's what do you need in your life at that moment? Very simple things sometimes, like having a partner that has to work in a specific location because they're a doctor or a nurse or anything like that, you know? And then you are in kind of in Minnesota, you know, but you're a software engineer. Like, what are you going to do, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But then on the other hand, I think the many companies that really critically just say, okay, we must be in one location because that's the only way to keep our culture, they're also missing out on something, right? You're missing out on a big talent pool, on cultural diversity, on different thoughts, innovation, all of that. All of that's been proven is being increased with remote work. But you need to do it right. And a lot of companies did like a shock emergency remote work and got stuck in that for 2 years. And a lot of people are traumatized. A lot of people don't want to work remotely because they say, no, I was stuck in my small apartment in New York City. I want an office.
Yeah.
And yeah, they need to get it.
Well, I think human beings in general want that personal contact. So I think, I think, and maybe you agree or disagree, but I think eventually it's going to become the hybrid, right? Yeah. That's what people also like, that, hey, I don't have to get up 5 days a week and drive into that big city, you know, in San Francisco and New York. It's at least an hour both ways, right?
Exactly.
Or and it's not so bad now, but it was.
Yeah, exactly. And I think hybrid is a tough one to do well. But most companies will have to do it. They will have to offer the flexibility to get the talent, and they will have to, you know, keep some sort of structure to keep the connection. But there'll always be those outliers, right? There'll always be the companies that stay fully on site, because that's just how they operate.
Right.
And there'll be people that will love that, you know, that say, okay, that's perfect for me in this moment. And then there are others that will always be fully remote. And there become more and more of those, right? And
right.
That's an interesting thing with startups now, and we're heading into a recession, and there's lots of layoffs, and there was this hyper growth going on for way too long, in my opinion, right? And now there's sort of a cleansing effect a little bit. But we do see that startups think about it differently. Like, they want to be able to be in an operating mode where they can become profitable much quicker. Right? They don't want to burn money and then rely on the next funding round. I think right now that was one of those key triggers for the layoffs that are happening, I think, in the U.S. even more than in Europe.
Like, probably,
I see, I mean, I see 2-3 a week every week. But majority, I would say, is still U.S. In Europe, I think that's an assumption, okay? Don't hold me to that. I think in the U.S., you would deal with it more publicly, whereas in Europe, I know just through hearsay and the startup scene of companies that have done layoffs, but it's not communicated at all. I feel like in the US, people are much quicker to go to LinkedIn, whether that's employees that have been laid off, you know, going like, hey, you know, looking for support. And then they get the thousands of likes and comments, and 50 recruiters like jumping at them, like, I've got a job for you, because people are still hiring. But yeah, in Europe, it's much more quiet, and it's not so common for people to post about it. There's still maybe this, oh, I've been laid off, like, I'm not going to.
What? Well, I think 30, 40 years ago, there was a stigma about it, but I think most people at some point in their life have been laid off for one reason or another. So it's not such a big deal. And it's not personal. It's a business decision.
Exactly. Absolutely. I don't know. I mean, I've never been laid off, and I'm not sure, I've not worked in a traditional German company in a very long time, what the current sentiment is. But in terms of startups, I think they're a little bit more hush-hush about it.
Right.
Than they would be in the U.S. Like, in the U.S., I saw this morning a CEO posting a selfie of him crying, saying he made a big mistake and he had to lay off people. With, of course, it's top of my feed because it got like 10,000 reactions. because it was a very personal, very heartfelt thing.
Yeah.
In Germany, no, I don't think a CEO would do that.
Yeah, you never know. There might be one or two out there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm not going to say never, but it's less likely. I would say that's...
So, so we talked about, I mean, you said that some people do it well, you know, build remote teams and build that remote culture, and some don't. What would you say are some of the things you would advise a company that's thinking, hey, I want to go remote? What would be some of the key things for them to think about and implement?
That's a very tough one. Like, it really depends on this. And we did this, and I didn't mention this at the beginning because we don't really do it anymore. But during COVID, we did a lot of actual consulting for remote setups because it was needed, right? At the time, not a lot of people were hiring. We're like, well, we've got all this expertise. We work with all these remote companies. So we work with more traditional businesses on their sort of, you know, setup, communication strategies, leadership, and so on. And there are a couple of things I think that would probably be the same across the board. And then some were like quite, you know, personalized projects. So I always say communication is the first, right? You don't start with the tools, but you start with sort of your people, right? And see how do they communicate? What are they missing when they're no longer at that water cooler, exchanging thoughts and ideas and innovation? Is it enough to implement Slack or create a couple of, you know, ideas and structures around that? But really to look at like, how does it work now, right? Well, I guess it's difficult because people were remote for such a long time. But what were you missing from the office that you need to fully integrate someone who will never come into the office, even if they can do it again, right? Let's say they sit in Brazil. They can come once every quarter. And really think about, what are your remote ways of working? Are you an asynchronous? Do you want to be asynchronous? You know, where people not just have location flexibility, but they also have time flexibility. And that opens you up to, cool, I can now hire in Vietnam or in Australia because I don't care that it's 15, 18 hours away.
Right.
That means you need a lot of documentation, right? And you need people to be excellent at writing, at being in context and project management and all sorts of things. Or are you happy with synchronous work, right? You say, okay, well, we're somewhere in the US, we're in the Americas time zone. Americas is a big block of two continents with a lot of countries. Am I happy here? You know, and it's quite synchronous, and I can have my daily calls with everybody sort of around morning, mid-morning, midday, whether they're in Brazil, in San Francisco, or in Chile. And that's the way you want your people to be happy, right? Like, in that human connection. I think that's really important to think about what kind of company we're building. And also, what are the business needs around that?
Right.
I think that's the other thing. I mean, we said Elon Musk famously is against remote work. At Tesla, which is a hardware production company, if you want to break it down to that, right, with factories and a factory floor. And he said, well, if the factory people can't work remotely, why should the manager in the in the office be able to? There are nuances to this that I don't want to get into, but the fact of the matter is, like, what are your business needs, right? Are you a blockchain Web3 company that really needs some experts in this field that I just cannot find where I am, not quick enough, not for the price that I, or the budget that I have? And in order to enable growth or capturing market shares or whatever, I just need these people. Then you kind of, you've got that necessity, right? So then you've got to think about, where can I realistically hire? What are the ways of communication? How do I document things? And how do I collaborate, right? How do I innovate and move forward? Because if you're a startup that's still figuring out what is my market, what is even my customer, you know, do we have product, et cetera, et cetera, like those early stages, I think their synchronous work is usually quite good. You can do that distributed, but
it's a little bit
with
hard.
The iterations, you'd be like that. There are much more mature companies. I'm going to give a concrete example. Automattic, I'm not sure if you interviewed them. Maybe not.
I've heard of them.
They're the builders of WordPress, essentially, which I think still about a third of the internet runs on, including AceWorks. So we run on Automattic or on WordPress. And they're fully asynchronous across all time zones with about 1,000 employees.
Oh, wow.
And it's just their culture. And I'm not sure if they still do this. This was about maybe a few years ago. They did the first interview with the candidates on a chat, right? Kind of like a Slack Slack chat back and forth, because they said this is, first of all, the main way of communicating with mm-hmm. each other, right? And we really want to check if they can write it, we can understand that quickly.
Oh, makes sense.
To me, it made absolute sense. Why would you interview someone face-to-face if you very rarely ever see them face-to-face?
Right.
So you eventually, of course, want to do that, but you also want to check, can they work with your ways of communication?
Yeah, very cool. And one of the things I've always thought, I've been working remotely for many years, but I think especially if you're a startup, it forces you to put processes and procedures in place that you might not do if everyone's coming into the office and, you know, that stuff kind of gets done at the water cooler.
Yep.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And that's really something that we've seen in those companies that we've consulted, that when you want to build a fully remote company, those growing pains that startups often experience, they happen earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in startups that, you know, start off in, I don't know, a cool Berlin office or a cool, I guess, San Francisco office, right? With the beer in the fridge and the foosball table and all of that, you start getting your growing pains and losing track of the culture and anonymity increasing and not everybody knowing everyone's face. I think at about like maybe 50 people, and then like 100 is really that, you know, where you're pushing it and you really need to change your processes. With remote teams, it's 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
It's 10. It's much, much smaller. So remote teams are really forced to put those processes in place really early, mm-hmm. which makes them in that later stage much more like prepared for that growth that they want, right? Let's say, you know, for them going from 10 to 20 is much harder than going from 50 to 100.
Right. Yes, I would agree. Well, Angelina, it's been great talking to you today. We have a lot in common, our two companies. Hopefully we can do another one of these maybe in a year. What do you think?
Absolutely. I'd be definitely interested. Please don't hold me accountable for the things that I say today in a year. But we didn't make too many future predictions, Mark, so I think we're fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see where we are. Maybe we're in a full-blown recession. Maybe we're absolutely fine and it was just smoke and mirrors.
Who knows? That's right. Time will tell. Well, thank you again and have a great evening.
Thank you.